Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is September 5th, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. We have a lot of upcoming events. It's the fall. Everybody's ready to get together. I'm going to be speaking at the CASE Summit in Tucson on October 4th, 5th, and 6th. I'll be at the conference. The topic is Your Investment Strategy, Avoiding the Material Emission Pitfalls. We're going to be talking about how to deal with a real deal when it comes to investing your money. Then on October 10th, I'm going to be in Boulder, Colorado, at the Breakthrough Energy Movement, and that's the interview tonight. We're going to be talking about Breakthrough Energy with one of the conference organizers, and Joel Garbon, who's leader of the new energy movement here in the States. My topic is going to be on crowdfunding, and we're also going to have a Soleri report on crowdfunding coming up in the third week of September, so stay tuned for that. We'll have a subscriber luncheon in Boulder. We're also going to have one in San Francisco, contiguous to the speech I'm giving on real estate and global financial market trends at the Appraisers Conference in San Francisco at the end of October. So keep an eye out for that. You can sign up for the Boulder lunch if you're going to be in Colorado that weekend, and we'll put the San Francisco luncheon up in about a week or two. Our theme tonight is crunch time opportunities. You've thought about the worst case. You have your disaster recovery plan. Now the question is, where's the opportunity to be useful? If you look around the world, there are more risks than you could possibly imagine. In some respects, it's always been that way. If you sit in the shoes of one of your ancestors in 1900 and look forward to the 20th century as to what they had to navigate, it was quite something. A lot of people didn't make it. So this is the way the world is. I have a friend who got me to read a great book on energy leadership, and it requires you at every moment, whenever anything is going on, including things you think are terrible, to say, this is an opportunity. So take a look around you and say, where is an opportunity to be of service? Because there are many people who could use your assistance, that I'm sure of. One opportunity, we're going to get together. The Soleri team comes together once a year, and we're coming together for the Soleri Summit, where we talk about what have we done right over the last year, what did we get wrong, what can we do to support and delight our subscribers and grow our audience. So send ideas and input, if you'd like to give it to us, to communicate at soleri.com, and we'll make sure that your voice gets heard in our deliberations. Particularly, let us know what are the interviews we could do or the coverage we could provide that would be most helpful to you. And again, send your input to communicate at soleri.com. The last report I did 2 weeks ago, we had a zombie attack, I'm afraid to say. It's described in one of our blog posts about it. But for those of you who got kicked off by the webinar software, a little token to express our apology has gone out in the mail. If you were on that call and didn't get that token, please let us know at customerservice@soleri.com. Okay, we've got great slides tonight. If you can, remember to watch them on the webinar software if you're listening to this live. Money and markets, of course. What we've got to talk about is Syria. The pro-Syria team, led by President Obama and Kerry, are bogged down in the mud. They've been forced to go to Congress. Congress has come back. Some members of Congress who were expected back on the 9th have come back early. There's a lot of wrangling going on. Very bad for the president. The Brits have voted no, and that's tough because usually it's the Brits swing in as the close ally, and the Anglo-American Alliance acts as one. This time, the U.S. is going to have to go it alone. Polls show that the Americans are very opposed to war in Syria of any kind, even if it's not boots on the ground. There's a G20 meeting in St. Petersburg today and tomorrow. Putin apparently opened, saying many people didn't want to talk about what was on the agenda. They wanted time to talk about Syria. So Putin is clearly applying the torture. Among other things, the president of Brazil has canceled their trip, apparently as a result of the Snowden revelations. Of course, NSA was hacking and tracking numerous foreign leaders and dignitaries. And, of course, Snowden now being under Putin's protection and Obama having to deal with this at G20, is, you know, I'm sure it's a difficult 2 days. Now, what is all of this about? If you look at the plan laid out by the Pentagon after 9/11, you had a list of countries that were expected to be attacked, occupied, and basically brought into empire after 9/11. Syria was on the list. I heard that presented several times. A great way of understanding the sort of overall grand chessboard is a video I put up by General Wesley Clark describing the fact that that was the plan at the top of the administration right after 9/11, and it continues. In part, it's about, yes, it's about the dollar. In part, it's about gas and oil. If you look at the one our cartoonist made, our latest Soleri tune, it's up on the blog, and he sent me one that was sort of deriding Obama pushing for Syria, but it didn't really give any of the deeper meaning. And in fact, I sent him a little note back saying, here, I want something that's really about the real deal. And he put that note up on his Facebook page. So we put it up with the first draft. If you click back on the blog, you'll find it. But the new one clearly mentions the dollar issue and gas and oil. But I think it's about a lot more than that. And one of the things that makes the leadership look so ridiculous is they're not in a position to say. And my guess at the end of the day is if you look at both sides of the squabble, whether it's the Chinese and the Russians trying to lock up Middle Eastern market share and oil and other resources, or the Americans, you know, neither side is for the people. You know, we have a series of increasingly totalitarian and centralized regimes squabbling with each other. And frankly, as long as they're squabbling with each other, we're probably better off than if one of them gets their way globally. But in, you know, all of them are members of the pro-centralization team. As far as I'm concerned, I put a little blog post up on the blog today about false flag operations. And one of the things I said, the gods are warring. And as I said, part of it involves more fallout from the NSA spying revelations, which from Obama's standpoint couldn't come at a worse time. Let's talk about disassociated leadership. There was a Bill Moyers interview of a New York Times editor who's written a new book called This Town, and it has really resonated with people because it's apparently done an effective job of communicating the fact that you have an entire town that makes money from centralization, including centralization that causes the economy to fail, causes people to fail. The worse things get, the more money they make. So you have a win-lose relationship between their profits and the general wealth and well-being of the whole. So it's almost like they're being paid and enjoy liquidating the American people and people globally. But the insensitivity and the sort of craziness of it somehow magically got communicated in this book, in this interview, and it's really resonating. Somehow, finally, people are beginning to realize that you have a group of leaders who are completely disassociated from real life. I'm reminded of a song by Leonard Cohen where he sings, "We are blinded by the beauty of our weapons." These are people who've been protected by, you know, powerful weaponry, media propaganda, and covert operations. They thought the system was working. The reality is system ultimately can't work just by force. There has to be the mandate of heaven. In no story this week was the example of this kind of cluelessness worse than a private briefing that a group of agricultural leaders, including Joel Salatin, received from the Secretary of Agriculture, who talked about the fact that the rural population was shrinking, and that was very bad because they were the people who provided young men and young women into the military. So if the population shrinks, then you have trouble getting more soldiers. And Salatin was completely stupefied and wrote a great blog post about the fact that the Secretary of Agriculture doesn't mind farms disappearing. He just minds, you know, not being able to source more kids for the military. This is exactly the kind of topics we were talking with Colonel Wilkerson in our interview several weeks ago with him. And if you haven't listened to that, I would really recommend it because he was basically saying, look, you know, we have real problems. We can't afford to have leadership that have, you know, been promoted just because they make more money for defense contractors. And we need greater transparency because we need to deal with real problems. We need our resources going there. So you have an instability in the situation because we now have a leadership group that has risen based on a certain kind of politics and unfortunately are becoming increasingly clueless. I keep saying, where is Lee Atwater when we need him? Lee Atwater being the campaign manager for George H.W. Bush, who was really from, you know, he really came up from the bottom and he stayed in touch with the streets and brought a kind of political intelligence to Washington that it's missing right now. Financial markets were in crunch time. If you take a look at the slides that we've put up, and again, we'll have the slides on the blog if you're not listening live. What you're beginning to see, interest rates are continuing to sneak up. And what we have is as we've talked about so many times in the Salieri Report, the bonds and contingent liabilities in the legacy systems are really beginning to pinch. The long-term bull market in bonds is over. Now the IUs are coming due. We have political leadership trying to sort of go around in circles rather than tell people the bad news. And part of what you're seeing in Syria and the different leadership is squabbling over who's going to get what cash flows as those IOUs come due, because the pain is real. The Fed meeting is coming up on September 17th and 18th. And the big question, of course, in everybody's mind in the markets is, will they start to taper? If they do, this pendulum of pulling capital from the emerging markets is no doubt going to continue. It's going to create more tension in the bond market. If they don't taper in September because of sort of the discomfort of what's going on, don't be surprised if they make more announcements about when they are. But tapering's coming, as I said. The leadership has decided to lower the boom. We have the Germans elections on the 22nd. So Merkel's head is on the block, and that's going to have a lot to say about how the workouts in Europe continue to go down. And I think after that is when the bail-ins are likely to proceed. Now, even though we have and let me just say a few words about a couple of the markets. The emerging markets have been correcting down, as has the North America market, and just in the last 20 to or few months. And then Europe, which has been relatively flat, we've seen a little, as talk of war goes up, the equity markets turn up. Gold, which has been rising, it's up about 8% over the last few weeks, is now got hit hard today, so it's turning down. But I would basically describe all of this as noise and going sideways. It wouldn't surprise me if gold heads down in another correction before it comes up. Again, we're coming into the strongest time of the year, so I think whether it goes down or sideways for the next month or two, that may just be noise. We'll talk a lot more about precious metals next week with Franklin Sanders. But sitting off in the corner with plenty of money is the guys with the black budget boys, as I would say. Interestingly enough, they appear to be the ones pushing hardest for war. Maybe they'll finally wake up and smell the roses and say, you know, it's hard to keep doing these things unless you have some support from the population. You can't just keep harvesting the population and expecting them to show up and support you on these things. They clearly want a move into Syria. There's rumors of unauthorized nuclear bombs moving into South Carolina, you know, question mark for what reason. But we're seeing a lot more information on the black budget sneak out. And I think it's because as the leadership seems disassociated and it becomes inconceivable to understand why we want war in Syria without, deeper understanding of reality, I think people are finally beginning to take a look at what's really going on. We saw Richard Sauter just came out with a new pretty good book on underground facilities, and I posted a review. It's up on the blog. Lars Scholl also had a great interview with one of the researchers on JFK that pointed out that he estimates that over 1,000 people have now been killed in the process of covering up the assassination. I think that's probably a pretty reasonable number. And I always stress to the Celeri Report subscribers, please don't underestimate how many people have tried to do the right thing in America and how many people have been harmed and destroyed and including killed. We also see lots of materials coming out on things. I put up a little review of Moon Rising and Moon Views, two documentaries about what in the world's going on the moon, working with the NASA sort of video and photo archives. Very interesting documentary. But one of the ideas that came up was space elevators, and I put a couple of the videos up in Wildcard so you could see what the idea is. Interestingly enough, as the new technology, both composite materials and fabrication technology, starts to come into into the economy, and as Dr. Farrell says, he thinks a lot of it's coming out of the black budget, which wouldn't surprise me, a lot of these ideas become more practicable. Once you have something like graphene coming out of the lab, when and if that happens, you know, it becomes a lot more feasible to build something like a space elevator. So don't be surprised. And I think it's one of the reasons you're seeing a lot of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs talking about space and going into space, because the new technology makes it more feasible. One other very interesting black budget story, back a week or two on the blog, more on the San Bernardino bankruptcy. Little known fact, San Bernardino was the absolute center of black budget mortgage fraud. So, that in and of itself. But keep expecting this stuff to leak out and start to get integrated with information about what's going on and what it has to do with things like the sort of kooky behavior of the leadership and going into places like Syria. Because at some point, I think we're all going to want an integrated picture of reality, and we're not going to get it. As I said, the global economy at this point is really run to serve the black budget. And so you have a force that's harvesting the entire planet, trillions of dollars going into it. And now we have a great deal of capital throughout the world moved into the black budget, sort of controlled corporations. And so, if that's where all the money's disappearing into and that's where all the technology is, at some point, we're going to have to understand it and deal with it in the overt world. Also on the blog this week, the interview that I did last month with Eunice Boston on coming clean and sort of cleaning and making sure your home is beautiful was so popular and really triggered some delightful insights. We decided to make it accessible to the Celeri blog readers because it's a great sort of example of what you get through the Celeri Report, which is very unique. So if you haven't and are interested, please feel free to send that forward to your friends and family and network. It's a wonderful interview, and I think gives just wonderful tidbits on what you can do to make your life more wonderful. Stupidest idea of the week. For many years, I supported myself with tips as a waitress or bartender. That was a very important source of income when I was in college. And this week, an IRS rule is leading restaurants to rethink automatic tips so that they won't put a tip on the check. Now, why is this so horrible? Well, one, it absolutely can contribute to much lower earnings for waitresses, but it comes at exactly the same time that Obamacare has caused many of the chain restaurants to reconsider their employment policies. We now have over 250 major employers who have cut work hours, jobs, or taken other steps so they can avoid or pull health care. So here we have employees who've been getting health care, and now they're going to lose it as a result of these companies trying to duck Obamacare. And so if you're a waitress, you're losing your health care at the same time the IRS is cutting your tips. It's almost like the administration has decided to make war on bartenders and waitresses, so and busboys. So if I could say any one thing you can do as a blow for democracy is please, please leave big tips for waitresses and bartenders and make sure you leave them in cash. Our hero this week is the CEO of Lenovo, one of the largest manufacturers of computers in the world. His name is Yang Yuan King, and he has decided to share his $3.25 million bonus with low-paid manufacturing employees. I think that's fantastic. And this is a man who I suspect thinks he's going to make money. He's going to make it all back on his options if the employees do a great job. So I think it's smart business. And but don't underestimate what a courageous act it is. I used to sneak part of my bonus out to the people who worked for me. When I was at Dylan Reed, it was against the rules. It was one of the few rules I would ever break. But the reality is, you know, if executives start doing this, it could force other executives to change. And so if you do it, you can, you're considered to be the stinker. But kudos for him. Ask Catherine. Okay, a question about oil. We have peak oil and limited resources and have abiotic oil and renewable resources. With the fallback of the Anglosphere into North America, what is your best guesstimate of the reported oil reserves of eastern Montana and North and South Dakota? Is this a temporary patch of plundering or a long-term strip mine approach? Also, any thoughts as to why this approach was taken in respect to other objectives that may be more nuanced than the obvious ones? Thank you for your truthful approach to reality. Take care. I think if you're the Anglo-American Alliance and you're looking to maintain control, first using the reserves in the Middle East and globally, and then moving back to reserves here while you develop more and newer technology, is, you know, certainly fits with the building of empire. It makes sense to me. That's what I guess it is. How much they're depending or how long-lived the reserves are. In North America, I suspect they are pretty long-lived, particularly if Europe does the same. There's a lot of resistance to fracking technology in Europe, but I would expect ultimately to for fracking to work out there. So I suspect the reserves here are pretty long-lived. If abiotic oil turns out to be true, and I don't know that it is, the life is then even longer. Jim Gillespie, Catherine, you've mentioned that you've learned through your own investigation and study that we as a nation and as a world can have everyone living in total abundance if the powers that be really wanted it that way. Keeping this mind, I'm assuming this means that all of the boom and bust that we've experienced, as well as the difficult economy that we're dealing right now, have been because the powers that be have wanted it this way. Is this correct? I would say, you know, I don't want to put everything on the powers that be, but there's no doubt about it that we have an extremely primitive culture, that the leadership encourages all sorts of boom and bust and divide and control and is harvesting the economy in very significant ways. If you want to understand how wealthy we are, you know, take a look at how much money has gone down the black budget and what it's paid for. And when you realize what we've been supporting without any kind of return on investment to us, it's really a testimony to how wealthy we are. So I don't think it's just the leadership. There's a lot of what I would call stinking thinking everywhere in the population. But I do think there is no economic reason that we don't have total abundance. I think our problems are political. And that's why I think there's no more important question to ask and answer than who's really in control and why are we behaving this way. Jim Sinclair, hi Catherine, Jim Sinclair sent out a video about public banking. What do you think? I put up an interview I did with Bonnie Faulkner to talk about solutions that were terrible ideas, one of them being B corporations and the other idea being public banks. The idea of giving the government even more subsidized credit so that they can steal away the market share of private local banks and credit unions, thus even more centralizing the economy and destroying more family wealth. I can't think of a worse idea. Anyway, but if you want to know more, check out the latest Bonnie Faulkner interview that we posted on the blog and is in your, it's sort of a special Solari report, and it's up on the Resource Center. Wondering about the meaning of this today, MoveOn.org just sent out an official vote opinion poll to its members. The polling question: should MoveOn support or oppose congressional authorization to use military force in Syria? This appears significant. Yes, MoveOn did do a poll, and I believe they got a 73% opposition. Another question. What about William Engdahl as a guest? We've had William Engdahl on before, and I would anticipate having him back as a guest. I think he's very capable and interesting writer on the sort of global geopolitics. Another question. I see that Richard Fisher, and he's the president of the Dallas Fed, is classified as one of the wealthiest Fed governors with a net worth of $21 million. While the market cap of J.P. Morgan is 10,000 times bigger at $190 billion, and it has no 5% or larger owners. So here's my question. Who are the banksters, and how much are they worth approximately, and how is it that they don't seem to control J.P. Morgan? I heard Jim Sinclair say that the headline news you hear are the banksters manipulating things don't seem to make sense to me, as the net worth seems to be dwarfed by people like Gates, etc. So who is actually manipulating, controlling Anglo-American finances? Finances are not controlled by who has money. Finances are controlled by who has the power to authorize people being killed with no, you know, above the law and with impunity. So if I have the power to kill with impunity, then I control. And so control works through physical force. It does not work through money. Money is certainly important, but I assure you there are a lot of billionaires who, in the scheme of things, are surprisingly clueless and surprisingly powerless, believe it or not. Okay, let me just check and see if there are more questions. No, that's it. Okay, our interview tonight is with Jeroen van Straten, who's the foundation chairman for Global Breakthrough Energy Movement. He and his team organized the conference in Holland last year. They're organizing the one in Boulder. And then we're also joined by Joel Garbon, the president of New Energy Movement. He's also the author of a great introductory book, Breakthrough Power, How Quantum Leap Energy Inventions Can Transform Our World. And you can, from the blog, you can link to the conference, see the program. I'll be there. Foster Gamble will be there. There's going to be a lot of scientists and inventors. It's a very, very interesting conference. Some of it goes completely over my head. I keep trying to understand what cold fusion really is. But it's certainly filled with very positive people looking to provide energy in a way that has far less environmental harm than many of the fossil fuel energy technologies. So it's a very interesting group, not just about energy, but about models to sort of reinvent and change our world. And it's a wonderful group of people. So the interview's up on the blog. Jeroen was coming in from Holland. He's a little bit harder to understand. So we made sure to get the transcript up this evening. So if you have trouble following the audio, the transcript is there. And I hope you enjoy it. For Let's Go to the Movies, we chose a wonderful, delightful movie from Chile called No. And it's about an advertising executive who helps with the plebiscite on Pinochet as to sort of whether Pinochet will continue to lead Chile or Chile will turn to a more democratic form of government. And while I think that it doesn't describe the 100% of the story on the plebiscite and the politics of who is pulling the strings behind the scenes, it is a very important reminder that successful politics means offering a positive vision, not a negative one. And you have this very delightful young advertising executive trying to persuade a whole bunch of serious activists that they need to be a little bit more charming, and that talking about some of the more gruesome truth is not necessarily going to help them win their win, necessitating, you know, a majority of the voters picking no. Anyway, so he's trying to win the day for no by getting people to have a yes kind of attitude. And it's a very charming reminder that the thing that wins the day in politics is a positive vision and helping people into a positive vision. So, and that's, I know as someone who deals with the dark side of the world, it can be very easy to forget. So a very charming movie from Chile, a small country that produces lots of great things. Anyway, in closing, coming up next week, we have a lot to talk about next week in Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin. The following week will be our coming clean for the month. I'll be talking about crowdfunding. We're expecting the new regulations from the SEC to come out in October or before the end of the year. I'm still surprised at how many people tell me, what's crowdfunding? Please go to the blog and just look up the articles on crowdfunding. Really educate yourself on crowdfunding and what's coming, because I think, you know, as Ed Sullivan used to say, this is going to be really, really big. And it's something I want you to know about, and it's something I want you to get ready for. And I'm hoping that'll be a good Solari report to introduce you. We'll be talking about it a lot on the Solari report, because I think this is going to be a development in the financial markets that's going to have a profound impact on our world in a whole variety of different ways. It's going to be not just a North America phenomenon or an Anglo-American phenomenon. It's going to be a global phenomenon. It's going to roll out in Europe at the same time, and I no doubt in Asia as well. And then, of course, the following week, John Rappaport will be back. So until September 12th, next week with Franklin Sanders, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there's a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.
It's my pleasure to welcome to the Solari Report two gentlemen, very special gentlemen. The first is coming into us from Holland, and Jeroen van Straten, who's the chairman of the Global BEM, that's the Breakthrough Energy Movement Group, who's putting on the conference in October in Boulder and put on an outstanding conference in Holland outside of Amsterdam last year, where Joel and I both attended. And the other gentleman is Joel Garbon, who's the president of the New Energy Movement. Joel is a industrial scientist by background and trade, and has been involved for many years in the chemical, pulp, paper, and water treatment industries. He's an inventor, developer, and author of a very good book, which I recommend to you, with investigative journalist Gene Manning, Breakthrough Power: How Quantum Leap New Energy Inventions Can Transform Our World. So, gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report.
Well, thanks for having us, Catherine.
So,
thank you, Catherine.
Joel, tell us, how did you get interested in energy technology, and how did New Energy Movement happen?
Well, my background is as an industrial science consultant. So after about 15 years of traveling all over North and South America, helping to solve technical issues in the pulp and paper and chemical industries, it gave me a chance to be exposed to a lot of what goes on in the environmental scene and how those industries have impacted our environment. I mean, just as an example, you know, flying late at night over the Amazon on my way to sites in Brazil, and actually being able to see the forest fires that were raging through the Amazon, as well as having a chance to see deforestation, whole mountainsides denuded, you know, by logging activities for the pulp and paper industry, and, you know, chemically contaminated streams and rivers. You know, all of this was just stirring me very deeply with concern for what's going on our planet. And I think I was starting to go through a consciousness awakening of some sorts, you know, by the time I had, reached, my early 40s. And I started to increasingly ask myself, and I would say even sometimes, you know, call out loud, you know, what can I do? What can I do to help? And I was becoming, you know, increasingly strident about feeling there's got to be something I can do. And I would say that I honestly had a personally profound mystical experience that answered that question of what can I do? And there was a very specific moment where I was in a quiet space, and I heard a voice speak to me very distinct from my own, and it said, you're to help bring about a new form of energy on this planet. And now I'm a scientist, and, you know, show me the data type of a person. And in my sense of startle from what I just experienced, all I could think of to say was, oh, you mean like solar energy? And again, this just being a voice, if a voice can have the quality of a smile, that's exactly what I experienced. And that voice said, no, not solar energy, but you'll see. And there was associated with all that just this amazing blanket of love and benevolence. And I simply said, yes, I will do this. And things started to happen very, very quickly then. And what I found was very soon I was in the midst of various inventors, some of whom were seeking me out for some reason that I couldn't put my hand on. And then I, in short order, was coming into contact with others who already were starting to or already had some history in promoting the new energy field, doing research, hosting conferences, one of these being Dr. Brian O'Leary. And, you know, Brian was a physicist, an Apollo-trained astronaut as well, and Brian had asked me to join with him and join with some others in starting a grassroots organization that would help to educate the public, the investment community, and media and policymakers about what's going on behind the scenes in breakthrough energy technology. And you know, went through some of our early birthing pains, but in late 2003, what was born was the new energy movement. And I'm happy to say that for the last 8 years, I've been serving as the president of New Energy Movement.
Yaron, how did you become interested in energy technology, and tell us how Global BEM emerged?
When I was 19, I got a book from my brother from Erica, Words of the Gods, and that really got me interested in the ancient aliens, UFO, conspiracy, spirit topics. And yeah, I went to our local library, and I basically all the books that I could. And a while later, into the energy question, because yeah, I realized that all these topics that I was reading about have one common denominator, and that was energy, and the problems that we're facing on the environment, economics, poverty, health. You name it, and it's connected to energy. So I started to organize things in 2008 on the secret space program, but that was more on a personal level that I was very interested in that. In the end, also a part of entertainment, I think, for a lot of people. And I thought, no, this is not the kind of conferences that I want to organize. Then I got the insight that I should organize conferences about energy solutions and what all means for us in future technology. So that's basically what I decided in 2000. My first conference on Break for Energy was in Boston. And it was a huge success. So I want to go. And I think that the place to be at this moment is the United States, because there's a lot of for these kind of topics. There's a lot of inventors, researchers in the United States, and I think if we really want to make it worldwide, if we can get the United States to be leading in that. Then change become much more quicker than I would only in Holland. So change the venue place, United States. And I didn't have a experience. I was an outsider as a kid. I fitted in with my friends. I played soccer, and I had a lot of friends on school. So that was not a problem. I always felt different or out of place. And when I started reading those books and got the idea about organizing conferences, it was all leading up to something. Yeah. Organizing these conferences and educating people about is what's the thing for me to do. That's basically my story.
Well, Joel and I were both in Holland, and I think we would both agree it was a huge success.
Yes, ma'am.
So let's turn to, I wanted to first sort of as a clearing start with the skeptics. Because I just had a wonderful ally and friend over for the weekend who was railing at me. Why are you doing breakthrough energy? You know, solar energy gives us everything we need. This is a waste of time. Or other people who say this is. I have one partner who says, you know, every time you bring this up, I just laugh at you. He's a skeptical engineer. So we've all dealt with a lot of skeptics. Talk for a second about. Why we think this is an important topic relative to fossil fuels or renewals, and why we think that breakthrough energy is both a feasible solution and is very real.
Well, first off, I think that being a skeptic is healthy. Now, being dogmatic and fixed in a position in the face of data, though, is something completely different. And as a scientist, I do approach things skeptically, but also open-minded. And I can say for certain that in my own investigations of this field, that there are very real breakthroughs in energy technology that you know, a decade ago would have been thought inconceivable. I'll use just one example here, and that's what's gone on in the cold fusion genre of technologies. You know, whereas that term itself, cold fusion, became very quickly associated with, you know, junk science, and that's how it was branded in the media, and then promptly dismissed. What we have seen is a very rigorous and robust worldwide research effort, fairly behind the scenes, but with very highly credentialed scientists, engineers, physicists, chemists, working on that field of technology, and who've really now delivered in various laboratories that span the globe, technology that is repeatable, it's robust, it's producing excess energy. So, and what I mean by excess energy is the amount of output from the reaction, in this case, generally as thermal energy, heat, significantly exceeds the amount of energy that's input into the process, which might have been, let's say, a certain amount of electrical input to start a reaction. And we're seeing this, you know, show up all over the world. It's been carried by mainstream news in some quarters, but not to a great extent, and certainly not nearly as extensive here in the United States as it is in some other countries that seem to be more embracing of these breakthroughs. And I think there's probably some, I think if you looked at countries that have a high dependence on outside sources for their energy, so those who don't really have any native reserves of oil or coal or natural gas or uranium, you know, they're the ones who really feel they have a much higher stake in some breakthroughs that can happen in the energy front and help lift them out of this total dependence on outside countries to keep their society fueled. So, you know, I just use that example of cold fusion to say, you know, there is something real going on, but it has really not been given its fair due because of a lot of historical baggage associated with that. That included some outright suppression And much of that suppression came from the mainstream science community, particularly from the standard nuclear physics community, who was highly threatened by the announcement that essentially a very robust energy technology was arising from apparently nuclear reactions that produced no harmful radioactivity. And that could not be explained by conventional principles of physics. That was very, very threatening to mainstream academic science. And you have to remember that most of the scientific funding that goes on, at least in the United States, is happening in laboratories that are very dependent on grants, both from government and from corporate sources. And generally speaking, if you are really out on the far leading edge, it is not as safe a place to be as if you are doing incremental research. The science community as a whole is very, very conservative. They really don't want to be two or three steps out in front of the research wave, because the more they push the envelope as far as doing things that seem to go beyond conventional understanding, the more they're liable to be looked at as crackpots or come under a lot of criticism. History is replete with those examples.
Yeah, well, if you've ever watched any kind of knowledge or intelligence be suppressed broadly and watched the mechanics of how it happens, you know, you realize it can happen in any area. I was very excited, Joel, to see you're going to be speaking on standardizing new energy testing protocols at the conference.
Well, this is something that, while the topic itself may sound very mundane, it's part of it's some of these mundane kind of common sense themes that have been lacking from this field. You know, it's easy to get excited about all the sensationalized promotions and news that come out. Oh, you know, we're going to have, you know, one penny a kilowatt energy because of this breakthrough or that breakthrough. And here's a whiz bang, something that's going to allow you to power your car on water and all this. And yeah, I mean, that is neat and exciting. One of the problems has been, though, is anyone who has searched the internet on something like, just Google water as fuel. You will find hundreds, if not thousands, of YouTube videos that come up of various inventors making claims of this and that, and they're running this device or this car on water and blah, blah, blah. But what you find when research is brought to this true investigation, the vast majority of claims like that and claims on other supposedly free energy or over unity energy processes, most of those claims end up being invalid when they are, you know, put to real scrutiny. And a big reason for this is because the type of testing that is being done when the performance claims are made by the inventor, that testing often does not conform to well accepted principles of measurement. And so it's very easy for well-intentioned inventors to think that they have something remarkable and breakthrough, when really they've either done a measurement that is inappropriate for what they believe they have, or they've misinterpreted the results, or they have a poor understanding of the science itself and simply are going down an assumption and a path that really is not well grounded in good technical rigor. So having a set of standardized testing protocols that can be applied to this field as a whole will serve greatly to basically thresh out the technology claims that really have no merit and produce a much more concentrated stream of technologies of merit that can then be vetted using the exact same sort of protocols. And then the investment community will come in with a lot greater certainty, because generally the investment community has been held at bay because of the very, very high proportion of these claims that turn out to be bogus.
Right.
So if we can get a much richer stream – of technologies that are really breakthrough and that deserve funding, you'll see the investment community step up to the plate, and these things will get accelerated to market much, much faster.
Right, I agree. That's why, to me, this is what I call a trim tab. It sounds like a small thing. It can make an enormous difference, and certainly for the investment side, it can make an enormous difference.
Yes.
So, well, let's turn to the program for October. Yaron, if you could just walk us through where we're going to be, what's going to be happening, and if you could discuss some of the topics that will be presented and who's going to be doing the presenting.
Yes. But first, take a step back and exactly where those persons who approach you about wind energy, because I always get this too, if I this topic mainstream or whatever I mean, always is about breakthrough energy movement is about solar and wind, and it's not that. The name is already been mentioned by Joel. I know Leary was also on me. His book and Joel is the Energy Solution Revolution. He gives a breakdown why solar and wind are not the solutions of our materials that have to be used. And if we're going to transform the energy grid for everybody in the world and wind grid, the raw materials that have to be used to establish that are in that sustainable I see this as an in-between technology before we finally get the holy and the holy grail is here, going to energy and those technologies who would tap into that. Yeah, I think we're being led the wrong again because they're going on solar and wind and again I know the solution, but to answer your question on the program, okay, the point is to be at the Boulder, Colorado University in Boulder, Colorado. Of course, it's going to be from 10 to 12 October. It's a little bit off. It's from day until the 7th because we couldn't someday on this was such a big opportunity to do it on a university decision because what Joel just discussed about the standards and the protocol, it's very that we get these kind of classes out of the in crowd scene who already go to these conferences already for 20 years and it's very. We want to make the breaks with Global BEM to the layman on the street and universities and to the students because I think, you need a bigger platform and a bigger from those groups of people to really make an impact. So,
I just have to, can I interrupt you for a second and tell you the thing that inspired me to come to Holland was I first spoke to you and you said that you wanted to connect and reach cab drivers and I said, okay, now you're speaking my language.
My end is that everything is going to be recorded HD in a professional way, and we are creating for the future. We're creating a DVD that hand out on all universities for free, and students are going to be up to speed with break for energy or free energy within an hour. So that's why we have so many speakers because cover as topics in time that we have all that good document and this documentary a video document within a year to educate people. Now to the program. program is set up that we're going to have three themes, and every day has its own theme. The first day is going to be the science and the technologies that we're going to discuss. So leading technologies like agriculture, hydro, cavitation, magnetics, and zero pole, that's basically the full name for a lot of these technologies. Now, some speakers that are going to make those presentations are Mark LeClaire, Maura King, Russell Anderson, Jamie Janover, Inter, together with Jason Matos, Niebauer, Ruby Kerr, Sterling Allen, and of course, Garden. They're thankful. We'll get back on those later. And the second day is going to thing on the implication. This is a topic that you almost never hear discussed on other courses on these topics. What's it going to mean for all of us if the first machine hit the marketplace? It's going to change on the health issues, economically, one. Need a big change economically to get out of this depression. We want to focus on those topics, social, cultural, especially, and this is a very important topic for me personally, consciously wise, because we have to make a shift not only in those topics, also in our head for these technologies to come. And so that's the second day. The third day is going to focus on the movement itself, actively on working together on a solution, on getting involved, but because mainstream media is very absent in this scene, it's of course it's not being discussed in politics. So those are the topics that we're going to focus on. That now we have two rooms. One is the Mackey Auditorium. We also got the old main chapel. That's a little bit smaller, but we're going to cover there a side. And on the side program, we're going to discuss things that maybe people never connected to the free energy or breakthrough energy scene, like 3D printing, like alchemy. Like funding, and we're also going to have a couple of who are garage researchers, Greece and Mark Bresci and Randy Powell, who really do the hands off stuff in the garage and the prints of the free energy. So that's basically the program is short, and I find out that we're going to start off with an art or a musical program to set the rest of the day. That was very successful in Holland, and we want to do this again this year. And at the end of each day, we're going to have a panel interaction with the public. They are allowed to ask questions to speakers who were there that day. Sasha Stone and Mitchell Rabin are going to panel this, and the main host for the Mackey Auditorium, and I'm very that she's trading, is Regina Meredith from Gaia and Conscious Media Network.
And she'll do a great job.
Yeah. She's very professional, and she's very in tune with these topics because she already interviewed a lot of the speakers on the program. We also with Global BEM, we really want to reach out to the students and to the young people. Why I'm very happy that Jason Frabelli is going to be the second host in the old main event because young. In the scene, and that's why it's good. And Powell's and Rush Greases and some others are getting on to the scene because and Just Thompson, I didn't mention that yet. Change always universe and from most of the time, when big changes. And that's why two speakers, Jay Over and Josh Thoms, who are going to talk about what art is the role of big change. Yeah, we at Global Bank, we think this is going to be the next big thing after the internet. And change and do that always almost nobody on this topic yet. And so, yeah, it's unbelievable that this is going to be the this is going to be the next big thing, and almost nobody in mainstream or on the street knows about this. So that's why we want to make a change with Global Bank.
Now, that you said the DVD, there's going to be a documentary, and it'll be handed out on universities. When will that happen?
When it's finished. But I wanted to do two conferences, so this is the second one, and then I've got, then I think we've got enough material to all topics related to Break for Energy. So the speakers will do a good job, and we can a lot of material and quotes from the person. And yeah, then it's not putting it together. Now, Robert Dupper, he's a graphic and audio guy behind the scenes. He already did a great job last year on the Hilversum footage. It's all online on Global Band Voices, and we're bringing out now free sessions because they first were you first have to be a subscriber to see them, but we're now putting out the free presentations. And Catherine, you were one of the first to put out.
I saw that you put them out.
Yeah, and I think the quality is very good. Now, Robert Dupper is doing everything himself, so that's why it takes so this conference, we're going to have a much more professional team within conference, so it's going to save time. And then they, that's missing in the equation, we need funds to distribute these DVDs on all universities around the world.
Now, everyone can see the program and learn more at your website at globalbem.com, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
And we also got a link to our ticket page there, and there's also a link to our Indiegogo campaign that is running right now to make this conference happen. I want to clear one short thing about that. Because questions from people, and you're selling a lot of expenses for the conference in there. The moment that we get in, it's already too late for the conference because you have to pay a lot of things up front.
Yeah.
And we are a foundation with peers. The funding is just not that. So that's why we're looking for sponsors and for people. If they can donate $5 or $10, it's great. Everything. And so that's why.
And you can donate it to your website.
Yeah, if you go to our home on the right hand side of the homepage, there's an Indiegogo click logo. Directs you to our Indiegogo, then you can pay there by credit card or PayPal.
Okay. And I would just mention that to Salary Report subscribers, we will be having a luncheon for subscribers on Saturday, so hopefully you can meet a lot of the subscribers who attend. Okay, next steps. What can a person do? I know I'm a lay person, and often when I've sat down and contemplated, you know, what was Nikola Tesla really talking about, or when I read Joel's book, you know, I find it overwhelming enough to deal with a utilities company, let alone contemplate what is this stuff, what do I do about it. But why don't you walk us through what can one person do to learn about this, to get the conversation to the next level. Give us some, break down a couple of steps that each person listening to this can take. They can go to the conference, but let's say they are not able to. Can you give us a pathway as to what one person can do to learn more and get involved?
Sure. I think, Catherine, that this all starts around education. And this is largely the reason why New Energy Movement was established. It was to reach out to the mainstream, non-technical public and make them aware of what's going on behind the scenes. And part of that is having people understand the implications of whether we stay on our current energy trajectory or we choose to make a course correction. Because if we stay on the current path, it doesn't really look too good for planet Earth and humanity. And anyone who pays attention to what's going on in the world as far as wars over resources, whether it's the environmental degradation of the air, the oceans, the forests, rivers, if we look at what's going on as far as the huge disparity in living conditions between, you know, the 0.1%ers and those below the 50%, I mean that the gulf there is just tremendous. And speaking of gulf, these large catastrophic devastating impacts on the ecosystem, like what happened in the Gulf of Mexico, or like what's happening and continues to happen at Fukushima. You know, it's poisoning the Pacific Ocean. I mean, come on. These are huge, huge things that people can't tune out, and they need to become aware of these things. The point here is everyone is a stakeholder in what direction we take on little planet Earth as far as our energy sources. The way to get educated on this is start with some basic materials. The Breakthrough Power book that Gene Manning and I authored was written specifically for the mainstream non-technical public. It's something that can easily be read and understood. Not only a little bit of the science, quite a bit about the personalities of the inventor community who are doing a lot of this novel work, but very heavy on the implications and how people can get involved. You know, another way people can get involved is to do things like attend a conference like we're speaking here at the University of Colorado in October, the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference. But you also can go to some websites. You can go to the newenergymovement.org website, again, newenergymovement.org, and you can start to see what some of the links are, various articles there. There's many, many resources that you can find. Some other good ones to check out are the Sterling Allen's website, which is PESWiki, PESWiki.com, PESWiki.com. He has a daily news service that reports on various aspects of the breakthrough energy scene. That's very interesting. And there's a huge catalog on his site and other sites about things that have been going on for the last several years. And there's great, great resources to provide links to other things. But the other part of this is, to start paying attention. We hear about a lot of the kind of same repetitive things in the news, and you know, it tends to have to do with kind of big politics, big corporate, big financial institutions, and then a lot of drivel about the personality cults in our society. This Hollywood star is doing this, you know, trivial thing, and the royals are having a baby and all this kind of stuff. You know, there's actually some very substantive things that are going on behind the scenes that it pays for people to pay attention to those.
And they're unbelievably positive.
Oh, yes.
You have wonderful people doing amazing things that could make a huge difference. And I think one of the reasons, you know, that I appreciate what both of you are doing is both New Energy Movement and Global Them are saying, hey, lay people are welcome. You don't have to be a scientist. You don't have to be an engineer.
Exactly.
You know, you can be an artist and make a contribution and be welcome and be involved.
Absolutely. And the kind of binding thing amongst all of these people are that they are dedicating their own personal skills and talents to being of service to a planet. I mean, we're talking about the stakes for our whole civilization here. And we're teetering right now. We really are teetering. And yes, it can be kind of dismaying to see, you know, some of what's going on, and people can even go into despair because it seems like, you know, what can I do?
Well, but here's the thing, Joel. When I was in Holland, I came back from, everybody came left so rejuvenated because
yes.
you spent a couple days with, you know, a very diverse group of people, but everyone was into service and everyone was doing something positive.
Yes.
And when you just looked at the accumulation of all these positive things that were going on, you said, wow, there's a whole new world being born. This
you,
is great.
You bet. And it's contagious.
It's contagious. It was contagious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I want to go to Boulder, because I want to get some more of that.
and I'll tell you, you know, the funny thing is that as amazing as all this stuff is, even if someone came there with an incredibly jaundiced and dogmatically skeptical eye, they will come away with more cocktail material to speak to their other skeptical friends about what they witnessed and heard and observed. You know, it's just amazing. But see, we know there is truth here.
Right.
And I, you know, personally, I've seen it. I have many relationships with the inventor community. I've seen some amazing things that, you know, simply are need more support to make it out into the public domain and have the real social benefit that is so pregnant. And, you know, it's coming. It is coming. It is coming, folks.
I just have to say what compels me, because in the, you know, I come from the investment community, and in the investment community, under U.S. law, if you fail to tell someone something they need to know, if you fail to disclose something that's material to their decision of investing time or money, that's a material omission, and that's a fraud.
Yes.
That's a criminal violation to omit some information. And I don't know, you know, I'm certainly not a scientist or an engineer, but I have certainly seen UFOs, as of most people that I know, including my neighbors here in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. And one of the things I know is they're not gassing up at Exxon. I keep saying, you know, who are those guys? And I know whatever is powering, you know, those ships, and, you know, whether they're coming out of Area 51 or someplace else, you know, they are not operating on fossil fuels. So somebody's running around this planet with this stuff. I know it's here. And to not delve into that, to not face that, to not talk about that, to me, that's a material omission, something I can't do as an investment advisor. So,
well, that's true. Now, I'll speak to that topic just very, very briefly here, because clearly there is strong relationship between advanced energy systems and advanced propulsion systems.
Right, exactly.
If people entertain the idea that there's intelligent life throughout this universe, which is just a mathematical certainty. It's not a probability, it's a mathematical certainty. And many of these would be less advanced than Earth culture, other would be more advanced. And in order for those cultures to travel interstellar distances, they would already have developed and be using an energy technology that can tap into that source of energy anywhere in space-time. It would be non-polluting. It would be infinite in its source, inexhaustible, and essentially free. And they've learned how to do that. Now, if what people have been seeing, and tens of millions of people, if what they've been seeing in the skies has nothing to do with visiting cultures, but is an Earth-based, humankind-derived technology, and it's being showcased to the global population through these advanced projects, black budget projects, covert programs, whatever, That also implies that humankind has already discovered these technologies of free energy and advanced propulsion, but have not used them for a social benefit.
Right.
These have been funded by taxpayers around the globe. They've been funded by various illicit economies, whether it's drugs or sex slavery or whatever. But these things are real. So either way it is, if there's intelligent visitors who are traveling across space, or if there's human invented and derived technologies that simply have not been disclosed to the public, they both imply the same thing. Advanced energy systems that are clean and inexhaustible, and advanced propulsion systems that allow us to explore the stars. So,
right.
So to me, this has great relevance to everyone who's alive on planet Earth right now.
Right, and it's time to connect those dots. You're on?
If add one thing to that, this energy technology or free energy was shown to billions of people on live television when 9/11 happened, because those towers. And I know very controversial, but had the lady on the program in Hilversum, Dr. Judy Wood, if people would spend 2 hours and watch the presentation, find out what was a break for anything. It was a display that these exist.
Yeah, one of the ways I first came to this was on work, doing financial work on the black budget. And I finally came to realize the extraordinary amounts of money that had been going to develop advanced technology, which had been kept secret to the American people. So this is all, I think for many of us, this is all part of connecting the dots. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. Before we close, if you could just both tell us how to keep up with you. And again, Jeroen, if you could walk us through how to sign up for the conference, that would be terrific. So, Joe, why don't we start with you?
Sure. You can follow the Work of New Energy Movement at newenergymovement.org. And I encourage you to get the Breakthrough Power book, read it, share it. You can find that book either at the newenergymovement.org website, or the book has its own website called breakthroughpower.net.
Your own?
People can find us at bem.com, and it's spelled with an E from energy. And you can click the tickets here, and that will direct you to a website from the who of all the ticketing. And a second web we have is Global BEM Voices, and we have a lot of new stuff on there. All the presentations from there can be found on that website. Randy from Radio just did his interviews for a podcast. It's called Transmission, and G-Man, the co-author of the book Breakthrough Power, was the first guest, and Pastor Gamble, who was also was the and we've got a new magazine, our magazine. It's called Pulse. So through our website, you become a subscriber to our new magazine. There's one more thing that I would like to mention. We got a lot of help from our new friends from Green Partner in Kent, and they provided a total forum and web shop that people can visit and get a lot of information from. There's a lot out there, so please visit our website, global.com.
So I just want to stress again that the three of us will be, and you mentioned Foster Gamble, who's been on the Solaria Report several times. We'll all be out at Boulder from October 10th to 12th, and we'd love to see you. And one of the things I can tell you from being in the conference at Holland is everyone is remarkably accessible. So if you want to talk to
any of us or you want to talk to any of the amazing inventors and scientists on the program, it's a real opportunity to get access and to have a chance to meet and greet. And as I said before, I know how inspiring it was to be around that many positive people doing positive things in Holland, and I know this one is just going to be that much better. So, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for joining us, and I can't thank you enough for everything that you're doing in the world. You're making an enormous difference, and we appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Catherine, and the same as far as you and your work. Great, great stuff.
Thank you for the opportunity on your show, we're in October.
Okay. Have a great day.